Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week up to the 9th of December 2019. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story looks at fast food company Greggs, which has capped 2019 with a top spot in Management Today's Britain's Most Admired Companies list. Not only has Greggs won the overall award, they also won awards for use of corporate assets, quality of management, and significantly inspirational leadership. As Management Today explained, the award marks a staggering 66-place jump for Greggs, which has pulled itself out of commercial difficulties to achieve annual sales in excess of £1 billion for the first time across its almost 2,000 branches. The publication noted that the firm has been particularly successful with how it has chosen to reinvent itself, focusing on the food-to-go market, extending its opening hours and embracing shifts in consumers' dietary preferences, including the launch of a vegan sausage roll that became an online sensation. Interviewed earlier this year, Greggs CEO Roger Whiteside hailed the vegan sausage roll for galvanising public interest in the firm. "Awareness of the brand has never been higher," he said, "and the vegan roll has helped with publicity and encouraging people to come and have a look at what we're doing." Kate, what are the skills and approaches that contribute to the sort of inspirational leadership that propels a company out of a struggle and into a place of respect and admiration?
Well, I think what Greggs are doing and what's inspirational about it is exactly what we found so many companies weren't doing in our recently published Colliding or Aligning investigation into organisational values. They are tapping into the trend of plant-based diets, and reports vary from between 1 and 7% of the population are adopting a plant-based diet. And yes, that might be for health reasons, but there's a sustainability argument, there's animal welfare, and these are values increasingly being associated with young people. And that's what Greggs are doing. Where's the market going? Where's it heading? These are going to be consumers for 50 or 60 years, these young people. And Greggs are getting close to them, providing them what they want, which seems to be vegan takeaway food.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at the decision by Google owners Larry Page and Sergey Brin to step back from direct managerial control of Google holding firm Alphabet earlier this month, handing the company off to Google CEO Sundar Pichai. In a special edition of Page and Brin's occasional founder's letter blogs, the pair write, "Today, in 2019, if the company was a person, it would be a young adult of 21 and it would be time to leave the roost. While it has been a tremendous privilege to be deeply involved in the day-to-day management of the company for so long, we believe it's time to assume the role of proud parents, offering advice and love, but not daily nagging." They go on to say, "We've never been ones to hold on to management roles when we think there's a better way to run the company, and point out that since they issued their first founder's letter, the company they built has evolved and matured." Kate, what sort of conditions enable founders to be confident that they're making the right decision?
It's so much a personal decision, isn't it? Letting go of something that you've created yourself and have seen grow, flourish and be successful. But the nature of the Google brand, the markets that they've gone into have been very fast moving, very disruptive, very on the edge of new things. So if anybody can move on and look for new challenges, it's these two. And as they say, they've always been looking for ways to manage better, do things differently. This is just another indication of their willingness to move and change as markets and environments suggest that they should.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at new research from the Rotterdam School of Management, Erasmus University, which suggests there is a darker side to authenticity at work. The research acknowledges that being yourself at work has a lot of positive effects, including boosting self-esteem and making people feel happier and more energised, and we also use authenticity as a standard by which we measure people. For instance, people get excited when they meet leaders who seem real. However, the study found that being yourself is not equally beneficial for everyone, as there can be a clear disconnect between feeling authentic and being perceived as authentic. Being perceived as authentic is what is important if you want to be seen as a better leader, but Dr. Leroy suggests this is where it often goes wrong if it is not also aligned with feeling authentic. Dr. Leroy hopes that people become more aware of the challenges and tensions around authenticity and advises leaders to find training which is about feeling authentic and making the bridge to perceived authenticity. Kate, how should leaders respond to this research on what is a fundamental value of the Institute?
Well, exactly. And when we were developing the authenticity dimension of leadership, we paid special attention to the idea that you have to know what your values are in order to authentically live them. And that self-awareness is a really important first step. And often authenticity is confused with honesty. And sometimes being authentic, it's not just about saying the first thing that comes into your head. It's about really not only understanding what you believe, but being mindful of other people's positions, understanding what a relationship means. But underlying any authentic interaction, there must be trust. So if you don't believe somebody's being authentic, they might as well not be. And that is what one has to work at, because if people trust you, they'll trust what you say, and they will trust what you say you feel when you say you feel it.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at recent data from the Office for National Statistics, which shows that the disability pay gap narrowed slightly in 2018, but was still significant at 12.2%, down only 0.5% on where it stood the previous year. CIPD Diversity and Inclusion Advisor Dr. Jill Miller said that while she was encouraged by the slight reduction of the pay gap, too many disabled people continue to face prejudice and struggle to get into employment or to remain in work, and are less likely to progress to senior management roles or to work in professional occupations. Businesses that aren't inclusive and don't manage health and disability effectively risk missing out on hardworking and talented individuals and damaging their reputation among staff and customers. Kate, in addition to ensuring that line managers are aware of their responsibilities about making reasonable adjustments, what else could leaders do to close the disability pay gap?
A lot more help with what constitutes a reasonable adjustment, I think, would be an interesting and useful first step, because that is very difficult for individual managers with individual employees who have different needs. Well, what is reasonable? So a lot of help around there. Again, it's shining a light on what is essentially unfair treatment. And if our workforces are going to deliver the goods and services to the general population of customers, we want that workforce to represent those people, to bring those insights, to bring that diversity, to make sure that we know the customers that we're talking to. So there's no excuse for this. And again, it's going back, really challenging yourself about how you recruit. What are those unconscious judgments you make? And as I said, you know, at the beginning, really think about reasonable adjustments, because the reward is a much wider talent pool.
Thank you, Kate. Before we end this podcast, Kate, is there anything that you would like to tell us about what has been going on in the Institute lately?
Well, as listeners will know, we're a partner with the University of Birmingham. We have a research partnership with them. And recently, they hosted an inclusivity event that was just amazing. We had 12 speakers only speaking for a short amount of time, bringing so many different perspectives and insights into what it is to be inclusive. Yes, many organisations have got a long way to go, but this event, in terms of the energy and the commitment, particularly from some of the younger speakers, was really impressive.
Well, thank you, Kate, and that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.